Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkerson, along with our senior editor at Pro Football Weekly, Eric Edholm. It's our pleasure to welcome you to this week's edition of PFW, the radio show, where every week we bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors before they actually happen.
We sort through the wild week that was in the NFL. Peyton Manning's a Bronco, the Saints were dealt a major blow from Roger Goodell, and Tebow Mania hits NYC.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, everybody, and thank you so much for joining us for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkers, the publisher and editor here, along with my co-host, our senior editor, Eric Edholm. Wayne Larrabee, of course, normally hosts the program for us, but Wayne has been out on assignment the last couple of weeks with the NC2A basketball tournament. Wayne should be back with us in studio next week. This week, we are going to bring you up to date on everything going on in the world of the National Football League, and Lord knows there's been a little bit going on. We have to start, of course, with the unprecedented penalties and punishment handed down to the New Orleans Saints. Let me recap really quickly for you one more time. Head coach Sean Payton suspended for a year, effective April 1st. The general manager of the ball club, Mickey Loomis, will be suspended for 8 games, beginning with the beginning of the NFL season. You've got linebackers coach and assistant head coach defense Joe Vitt, who was thought to be the guy who would cover for Sean Payton if he got suspended. He suspended for the first 6 games of the season. Former defensive coordinator Greg Williams, now at the St. Louis Rams, suspended for at least a year and indefinitely beyond that. The New Orleans Saints ball club will be fined $500,000 and 2 second-round picks. Probably would have cost him a one, but they don't have one this year. That's already gone in a trade. And we asked, I think everybody was asking all week long from Roger Goodell, why so severe? Why'd you have to do this? Well, this is what he told the NFL Network earlier this week.
It's very clear. We have a serious violation of an existing rule that threatens the health and welfare of our players. In addition, this went on for 3 years, and it was investigated. We were misled, and there were denials throughout that period. And meanwhile, there continued to be risks to our players and to the integrity of our game. So it calls for very significant and clear messages.
Eric, we're going to welcome in Associate Editor Dan Parr, who covers the NFC South for us, and of course the New Orleans Saints. And you know, guys, I think we ought to start with where this really belongs. Yeah, you know, the bounty program is wrong. I'm not even sure exactly what rule the commissioner is saying it violates. He had to do something. But the severity of these punishment, guys, is clearly about the lying part. It's about the deceit. It's about he gave them a chance to make it better. Probably would have been some small penalties, and they thumbed their nose at him. And, Eric, I'll start with you. Clearly, Roger Goodell is pissed at Sean Payton.
Absolutely. There's no question that he challenged Goodell's authority, that they kind of thumbed their noses at the NFL authority. And, I mean, have we not learned from Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds and people like that? It's the cover-up. That's what really gets people in trouble. You know, had Greg Williams been forthcoming, had Sean Payton put an end to this thing early on, I think it really would have led to a far lesser penalty, maybe less than the Spygate scandal a few years ago.
You know, Dan, one thing the commissioner has made clear in all the statements that he's released, that their investigation reveals, to their best knowledge, that Tom Benson was in no way involved with the bounty program, and also, when notified originally, assured the league he would do what he had to do to get it cleaned up, and told Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton to do everything that they had to get it cleaned up, and that he apparently is an innocent victim here, and yet his football team just getting hammered.
Yeah, he ordered, according to the NFL, Mickey Loomis to stop that program, and you know, while there may have been a comment here or there or a question here or there, it was not stopped. And the Saints knew this was going on, that there was an investigation going on that continued the program. So just not real smart, arrogant, thinking you can somehow get around the rules and you're going to fool Roger Goodell, thinking that they would not catch up to you. You could beat this, you know, just a sign of hubris, really, from Sean Payton and all those at the top of the Saints organization. Tom Benson now has a situation on his hands where he needs to find a head coach for the 2012 season. He's going to need to have a general manager in place for half the regular season. Again, like you mentioned, down some serious cash and a couple draft picks for a team that really, while they do spend to keep their own players, has built a very successful team by doing a good job of drafting. So they are hamstrung here going forward.
And you know, Dan, interestingly enough, the Saints do not have an assistant general manager. They don't have a director of player personnel. Rick Pryorish is their director of college scouting, which is two or three steps removed from a GM, and yet with Mickey Loomis being sat down, well, he will be there for the draft, actually, so that shouldn't be a big concern. I think the bigger concern, though, is that the belief was that Joe Vitt was the guy who would take over if, in fact, Sean Payton got suspended. Now they're both gone for at least the first third of the season. Obviously, the arrows are pointing right now at offensive coordinator Pete Carmichael, new defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo, who does have experience as a head coach. And fans may not realize it was Carmichael who called all the plays for the Saints from the time that Payton had the knee injury early in the season last year. So on an offensive and play-calling perspective, this isn't as serious as you would think. But we don't know if, in fact, Carmichael is going to get the head coaching duties. If he did, he might not be able to call plays. Do you go to Spagnuolo, who's brand new, or do you bring somebody in from the outside?
I would take a hard look at what is available outside. I think it would be less disruptive to this team if you're able to keep the people that you hired to do certain jobs in those jobs and have someone in a caretaker role for a year that want to make one last run at it, come in and do it. And, you know, the name that I tossed out, I have no idea if he'd have any interest in it, and I'm guessing he probably would not, would be Bill Parcells, because him and Sean Payton, obviously very close. Sean Payton worked under him. Really, he just got his career restarted with Bill Parcells in Dallas, which led him to the job with the Saints. Again, this is a far-fetched idea. The more likely scenario is Carmichael or Spagnuolo. To me, I think Spagnuolo would be the more natural fit. He brought along his defensive coordinator from St. Louis as the Saints' secondary coach. Now you could put him in as a defensive coordinator and then let Pete Carmichael handle calling the plays, which he did a pretty good job of last year when he got the opportunity to. You know, that's a big job in and of itself, and I think that Spagnuolo maybe fits the profile a little better as a head coach. Not as familiar with the personnel that he's going to have as Carmichael is, but a guy who's, you know, didn't have great success, obviously, with the Rams, which is why he was fired from that job, but is a guy that I think people think could do more with the pieces he has in New Orleans.
Well, Dan, I'll give you another thought if you want to get dramatic. We've got to take a commercial here. I originally said Brian Billick because I was thinking about all the offensive talent, but Pete Carmichael can handle the offense fine. I'd say to Bill Cowher, how about a 1 year, instead of taking a hiatus from football, take a hiatus from broadcasting. You got Carmichael in place. He doesn't have to deal with the offense. Defensively, Spagnuolo will do just fine. All he's got to do is come in, inspire these guys, let them play the underdog role, show that iron jaw all, you know, week long. He could win a Super Bowl and go right back to the broadcast booth without having to take the job.
I want Jim Mora. That's who I want. I want Jim Mora to come in and say, playoffs? What? You know, that would fit too well, I think.
You know, but there's too much talent to doubt this team can get there. Guys, we're going to take this very quick commercial break. We've got a lot more in the NFC South. Dan also covers the Chicago Bears. We'll talk about their free agency moves last week in a moment. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. Hub Arkish and Eric Edholm in studio. We are visiting with Dan Parr, associate editor covering the NFC South and the Chicago Bears. We're going to be joined by executive editor Dan Arkish in just a moment. Talked in the first segment, of course, about the situation with the New Orleans Saints, and one other thing to add there. The players involved apparently still will be dealt with. Roger Goodell said that in his statement. They're waiting to meet with the NFLPA. That's a whole different issue dealing with players because all of these things are appealable. It's what can you prove, not what did you hear. You know, was there any result? And I think there are certain players who not only will appeal but could consider legal action. So I think it's a lot murkier as to what the commissioner's going to be able to do. I mean, a guy like Jonathan Vilma is obviously going to get hit. Other than that, we just don't know. So there will be more on this story as we go down the road. Dan, before I let you go, Chicago Bears, you know, Phil Emery comes in, and a lot of people wonder what kind of GM will he be. Few have wheeled and dealed with the success that he has over the past 10 days or so. We talked about the Brandon Marshall trade last week. Late this past week, he signs Michael Bush away from the Raiders. We know the Bengals were interested. They signed Ben-Jarvis Green-Ellis. But Michael Bush is a fascinating, quote, backup to Matt Forte, who probably taking a four-year deal with $7 million guaranteed just ended any hopes Matt Forte had of getting the long-term contract he wanted.
He does lose some leverage. The Bears now have protection now. In case Forte decides he was going to hold out and they still haven't worked out a long-term contract. Now, just as recently as last week, we heard from Phil Emery that the Bears are still committed to having Matt Forte in the fold long-term, that they are negotiating, they are talking about a contract. You know, I'm not sure what would be taking so long in a negotiation. It seems pretty clear what the number would be if they're going to get something done. But at this point, the Bears have spent a lot of money. I mean, we're talking I don't know, $15 million or so over the past few years to find a good complement for Matt Forte between Chester Taylor, Marion Barber, who seems likely to be on his way out now after the signing of Bush, and then you throw Bush $7 million guaranteed in there, too. They've spent quite a bit. This is a, you know, we coupled the Bush signing with the signing of Jason Campbell, who got a very nice, elite money for a backup quarterback. Phil Emery showing he wants good depth at quarterback and running back, something the Bears lacked at times under Jerry Angelo's predecessor.
Well, they finished the season with Josh McCown and Khalil Bell as their starters, so you can certainly understand why he'd want to go there. Dan, thank you very much. We want to welcome in executive editor Dan Arkish now, and Dan covers the NFC West and the Green Bay Packers. Dan, we're going to stay out west in this segment and talk about the Seattle Seahawks, who've been interesting players. They are patting themselves on the back as hard as they can for re-signing Red Bryant and Marshawn Lynch before adding Matt Flynn. You know, I like the Matt Flynn signing, like the Red Bryant signing. Seems to me they gave a lot of guaranteed money to a running back who's basically shown up for half a season in his contract year in his NFL career.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there, Hub. They did kind of buck the trend, making a long-term commitment to Marshawn Lynch. But I think there are extenuating circumstances with Marshawn, an extremely popular guy out there in the Pacific Northwest, young and hopefully a guy that's going to stay healthy and you know, has his best years ahead of him. I mean, he is clearly, even though Flynn has joined the team now, this offense is going to continue to revolve around Marshawn Lynch first and foremost.
Dan, one of your other teams, the San Francisco 49ers, just a fascinating little two-week dalliance with Peyton Manning. At one point, they appeared to be the favorites to land him. You know, if you're just pulling the three teams that ended up being finalists for Manning, they were probably the one that's closest to winning now. We saw them in the NFC title game. A couple of bad bounces left them out of the Super Bowl, but that left Alex Smith off to the side for a little bit, and he went down and visited Miami. He's now back in the fold with the 49ers, maybe some hurt feelings. Just talk about his situation there and whether he can kind of put aside the Manning pursuit and whether he's been able to sort of get past all that and whether he thinks he can work it out with Jim Harbaugh.
Well, Eric, very interestingly, Alex Smith came out just recently and said that he would have welcomed the competition of a Peyton Manning.
Not sure that's competition, is it, really?
Right, but I'll tell you what. I don't think there's a player with a thicker skin in the NFL than Alex Smith. I mean, here's a former first-round pick that was a whipping boy out there in the Bay Area for the longest time. And I don't think there's going to be hard feelings as a result of this. I mean, he really blossomed under Jim Harbaugh. They're both big boys, and I think they're going to, you know, continue to coexist very nicely.
And if he views himself as competition to Peyton Manning, there may not be a player with a thicker skull in the NFL either, but you got to give the kid credit. I mean, you know, this is the situation he was handed, and clearly he's the man now. You know, forget everything else that happened. He's the man, and Dan, they got him some toys. You know, you got Randy Moss. You got Mario Manningham. I don't know what Michael Crabtree is going to be. You know, maybe Kendall Hunter becomes even more of a factor as a change of pace back. They've got a really good offensive line. This offense should improve if Randy Moss is 80 or 90% of Randy Moss.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of hard to figure out right now, you know, who the number one through three receivers are between Moss and Manningham and Crabtree. Moss is a fascinating signing. You know, he's had a year off, but we all know about his great body of work. Even if he ends up playing in a limited role, he still, by all accounts, has that 4.4 speed and, you know, could be a real downfield threat that they could really use.
One other question very quickly, Dan. The Arizona Cardinals, they really had no choice. You know, prior to Peyton Manning actually becoming a free agent, I think everybody believed the two favorites were the Miami Dolphins and the Arizona Cardinals. From the moment he became a free agent, it became pretty obvious that neither of them really had much of a chance. They give the $7 million roster bonus to Kevin Cobb. It's not exactly a ringing endorsement. Is there a position that we've settled our starting quarterback situation?
No, in this case, it definitely is not. John Skelton, when he got the opportunity to perform in a starting role last year when Cobb was down, did pretty well. And I think, you know, he's going to get a shot to compete with Cobb. I think Cobb definitely is the front runner. I mean, he got that $7 million bonus, but he's going to have to show some major improvement. He also needs to stay a lot healthier. He did miss 6-7 games last year with an assortment of injuries.
Well, and of course, the big question in Arizona is either John Skelton or Kevin Cobb the answer. Dan, thank you much for your time. We have to take another commercial break here. A little bit of story out of the Rockies this week, too. Eli Cabron will be here to tell us about it in a moment.
do. I'm not where I want to be. I know that I need the training staff here and the weight staff to help me get to where I want to be. I know, like I said, as soon as this is over, I'm going to start right away on that process. I have a lot of work to do in getting to where I want to be from a health standpoint and, you know, learning this offense. This is going to take a ton of work. And so the sooner I can get started, the better. It's a challenge that I look forward to meeting. But I'm going to need a lot of help around me to help get those goals done.
Well, and of course, when Peyton Manning talks about being here, he means here with the Denver Broncos. He is their new starting quarterback. Obviously, a number of tentacles to this story. But first, let's welcome in Eli Cabron, who covers the Eli West and the Eli West. Also covers the AFC West, but he's not covering the Eli West and the Denver Broncos. And Eli, this is still a bit of a surprise to me. I understand it's over. I should be used to it. It happened several days ago. But I look at what Manning's options were, and I still say if it was about winning, he should have gone to Frisco. If it was about money and comfort, he should have gone to Tennessee. I thought the Broncos were the third choice. It was his first choice. What is your understanding of why?
I think there's a variety of reasons why, Hub. The main one being that his comfort level with John Elway kind of he's trying to follow that career arc of going out as a champion, and he kind of sees John Elway as a mentor and an idol in that role. He obviously grew up a big fan of John Elway's, and that comfort level with another Hall of Fame quarterback is probably something that he couldn't find elsewhere. And I think that the fact that he and John Fox could get along and try to work out an offense that best fits both of them, I think he saw the 49ers situation as he'd be butting heads a lot with Jim Harbaugh, who's kind of another take-charge personality, and I think he saw more freedom with the Broncos to kind of do what he wants to do.
Okay, so what's next? What are the imprints that Manning has? I know he said in the conference that personnel matters aren't his thing, but you can bet that Fox and Elway and everybody else are going to ask Manning what he wants. A lot of former Colts out there in the free agent market. We could see some changes to the offense. What do you think's coming next?
Yeah, the Broncos have been really quiet, other than Manning, obviously, in the free agent market, and that means that they have a lot of holes to fill. I think they could definitely see them adding a former Colts tight end, either Dallas Clark or Jacob Tammy. Both of those guys have put up big numbers with Manning in the past. Jeff Saturday, one of Manning's best friends, could come in. He could take over for J.D. Walton at center with the Broncos. So there's still lots to do. But long-term for the Broncos, I still think that they're going to draft a quarterback because Manning turns 36 on March 24th. So they have no other backup on the roster now that they've traded Tim Tebow. So they're definitely still in the market for a young quarterback.
He also has that little neck thing, too. I don't know. Yeah, that.
Well, they have no plan B, so they...
That's right. Elway said it, yeah.
Well, and Eli, you mentioned it. This did significantly involve another player, a kid named Tebow. I don't know if you've heard of him or not. But John Elway had a big decision to make, and he talked about the impact of Tim Tebow that came from his decision to bring in Peyton Manning.
Tim Tebow is a great kid, and I said that. I mean, he's the one guy, if I wanted someone to marry my daughter, it'd be him. And I just think that where we are as an organization, and Tim is a football player, as I said, I told you Tim is a great football player. But I just think with the opportunity that presented itself here, with the opportunity to have Peyton Manning's services, we had to take advantage of that.
You know, and it's interesting. You listen to Elway talk, and he never really did say anything resembling why they had to trade Tim Tebow. I mean, he comes in talking about Tebow, guys, and he ends up talking about, but we got Manning. And I thought all along that it made the ultimate sense to keep him, more sense than it made to any other team to go out and get him. Now, we know that a lot of teams' names were thrown out. It appears the only three who were serious were the Jacksonville Jaguars, possibly the St. Louis Rams, and the New York Jets, who ended up getting him. Mike Tannenbaum, the general manager of the New York Jets, was talking on WFAN in New York earlier this week, and he talked about why they are the ones who were successful in going out and acquiring Tim Tebow.
At the end of the season, you know, our priority was to extend Mark Sanchez. He is our starter. We feel really good about it. We have signed him to a long-term extension. He is our starter. With that said, we had an opportunity, in our view, to get a dynamic player, backup quarterback, that could help us. He's under contract for the next 3 years. And when we went through our decision-making process, we felt that getting a guy of his caliber and his playmaking ability would make our offense harder to prepare for and more diverse and more dynamic. We also understand that he comes with, you know, a very unusual following, and that's something we're prepared for and we know we have to manage.
Guys, as far as I'm concerned, Mike Tannenbaum just gave no explanation whatsoever as to why the Jets would do something this silly. Number one and foremost, Tim Tebow is not a backup quarterback. He's not a starting quarterback. He's not a backup quarterback. He's not a guy you can put out there to run an NFL offense. The Broncos proved it. You got to have a separate offense for him if you want him to have a chance to be successful. And then comes all the other stuff that I don't even want to get involved in. guys, I don't know, and Eli, you could answer this for me. I don't know that you would call the Denver area, you know, heavily leaning to the right, you know, which is going to favor a Tebow more. I think it's fairly balanced. Maybe it leans a little bit to the right. But what we do know is the New York market leans the furthest to the left of any geographic region in the country, and there's going to be a whole different reaction to Tim Tebow with the Jets than there was with the Broncos.
I agree, but the thing is, if Mark Sanchez struggles, I don't think the Jets fans are going to care who the backup is. They're going to want Sanchez out of there. They've been through so much with Sanchez over the last few years, and a guy as polarizing as Tebow, this is going to cause a lot of headaches, I think, for Mike Tannenbaum and Rex Ryan and them, unless Sanchez proves to be a successful quarterback, which they obviously are banking on both financially and in terms of their football team. Mike Tannenbaum said during a conference call with reporters that they have a specific package for Tebow. He obviously knows Jets offensive coordinator Tony Sparano. They were working together in the Senior Bowl a few years ago, and Tony Sparano is known for his Wildcat offense, so you could see Tebow there, but it's just going to be a major headache if Sanchez struggles and the fans are clamoring for Tebow.
And one quick thought as we head out of this segment. That extension they signed him to is a lot like the Donovan McNabb extension the Redskins signed him to. There's a lot of funny money in there. They basically committed one extra year to him. To me, they can cut ties if they need to.
Well, and here's what I was going for, because Eli, I agree with you, but I'll come at it from the other angle. Yeah, Sanchez is on the bubble immediately. They're going to scream for his head. If they go to Tebow, and it takes less than a quarter to find out that he can't play quarterback in that offense, imagine the beating this kid's going to take.
Right.
And this is the part that frosts me about the whole thing. Say what you want about who Tim Tebow is and his beliefs. Nobody disputes he's a good kid.
Yep.
And he deserved better than this. I really believe this. Now, I don't know if he had any input into whether he ended up in New York or not, but I just think he deserved better than this. Eli, hang with me for just a minute. We got to take a commercial break. Want to ask you about one other club in your division as soon as we get back. Yes, we are. Hub Arkeschner, Eric Edholm in studio with you. Wayne Larrabee out on assignment. Wayne should be back with us next week. We are visiting with Eli Caber, an associate editor at Pro Football Weekly. Eli covers the AFC West, and with all the Saints and Manning and Tebow talk aside and the Jets and all that, a lot of other news around the NFL. And Eli, one other club of yours I just want to get a quick comment on. I really like what the Kansas City Chiefs and GM Scott Pioli have done quietly in free agency this year. You know, they got clobbered by injuries last year, particularly on offense. So they bring in Brady Quinn as their backup quarterback. Peyton Hillis is their number two running back. Really upgraded the offensive line with Eric Winston and tight end with Kevin Boss. Even if it's just depth, those are some pretty impressive moves.
I agree, Hub. I think that they had a specific plan. They wanted to address the depth on offense, and they were able to do that. They got guys that they're comfortable with. Brady Quinn obviously knows Romeo Crennel well from their time together with the Browns. So the Chiefs are right where they want to be heading into the draft, where they can upgrade their defense.
All right, Eli, thank you for all your work on these stories. We're now going to have you bring in Associate Editor Arthur Arkush, and Arthur's got the AFC South. Arthur, I start with the Houston Texans. Strange offseason in Houston. I got to believe a lot of people are scratching their heads down there. They apparently are doing addition by subtraction. They now trade former two-time Pro Bowl linebacker D'Amico Ryans to the Philadelphia Eagles. All they get back is a fourth-round pick. What is the thinking there?
Well, D'Amico was owed about $6 million this season, so it's definitely a cost-cutting move, although it's actually not going to give him a whole lot of cap relief. The thinking more than anything was that D'Amico had become really a 1-2-down player in Wade Phillips' defense. They go to that dime package so much, and Cushing is the inside linebacker that always stays on the field. So they really like young Daryl Sharpton, who should be coming back from a season-ending injury. The real question is, how much is he going to be missed? He's still a very solid player when he's healthy, but he's also been a big contributor off the field, one of the leaders in that locker room. And when you take away both Eric Winston and D'Amico Ryans, there's certainly going to be some questions from that regard.
Eric, you cover the Philadelphia Eagles. They had not only the youngest, most inexperienced linebacker corps in the league last year, but it was the Achilles heel of that football team. Now, the interesting transition there was the Achilles that you know, damaged D'Amico Ryans, and believed to be 100% healthy. If he is, this sounds like a steal for the Eagles.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've been looking at linebacker candidates in the draft and free agency, and nobody really experienced or thought that the trade would come into play here. And it's funny that I actually talked to Wade Phillips and D'Amico Ryans at the Ed Black Courage Awards last week, and both talked very, very praiseworthy of each other. And this is before we had any information about the trade, but this just brings it all together. You know, one of the things the Eagles really lacked, even with guys like Colin Jenkins last year, was just a leader, a guy who could kind of smack some helmets around, make sure everybody was on the same page. Let's get going here. They've got a full offseason. They've got Ryan in tow. They can go in any direction with that first round. first-round pick now. They don't have to pick a linebacker, which they've never wanted to do that high before.
Arthur, there are abundant reports out there that Gene Smith, the general manager of the Jacksonville Jaguars, did his best to explain to the owner of his ball club, Shad Khan, why Tim Tebow was a bad fit in Jacksonville. Apparently the response he got, these are the reports we're getting, is that the owner, Shad Khan, mandated him to make his best effort to trade for him anyway. Didn't work out, obviously. What are you hearing about this story?
Well, everything you just said is accurate, and I think more than anything, this, you know, obviously Tebow chose the Jets, and I think more than anything, this just kind of leaves the Jaguars looking a little bit silly. Not only do they have a meddling owner, you know, kind of overruling what the front office people wanted to do, but then they had a second opportunity earlier this week to land Tebow, and they weren't willing to pony up a little bit of extra cash. That fourth rounder was on the table, but weren't willing to spend a little bit of extra dough, and obviously he ends up in New York, and the Jaguars end up kind of looking like they didn't get their guy on a couple different opportunities.
Yeah, hopefully Khan is understanding, though, because it may be the best football move Gene Smith has ever made, not getting him. You know, they just signed Chad Henne. You just drafted Blaine Gabbert.
Right.
They didn't need that aggravation in Jacksonville. Real quickly, Arthur, Tennessee Titans swung and missed at Peyton Manning. We don't even know if they got to take a swing at Mario Williams, although they were rumored to be a team who was interested. They signed Cameron Wimbley. What's the fit there? Does it make sense?
It makes sense in the sense that they absolutely needed pass rush help. Cameron Wimbley is a guy who should be able to help there. He's still young and still is viewed as a guy who's just entering his prime, but he's also a guy who's played outside linebacker for the most part in his career, and he's going to transition. They've got it penciled in as the starting right end, so if he can make that transition and be a force not only as a pass rusher but also give a little bit of assistance as a run defender, it could turn out to be a nice move. I'll tell you what, he was the best remaining pass rusher on the board after Mario Williams and John Abraham. Some of these guys were gone, so you got to kind of tip your cap to the Titans for making the best out of, you know, whatever situation they were dealt.
All right, Arthur, thank you very much. We have to take another quick commercial break here. We want to get to the rest of Eric's teams in the NFC East, and senior editor Mike Wilkening, covering the AFC North, will join us as well. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. We roll on with Eric Edholm in the NFC East. And Eric, we just touched on the Eagles. The Washington Redskins went to Robert Griffin III's Pro Day this week. Very impressed. Their only concern now is could the Indianapolis Colts change their mind and take them ahead of Andrew Luck? That's not going to happen. I think it's going to be Luck Griffin. We know that. But other news for the Redskins this week. They apparently are in the clear relative to the whole bounty issue and Greg Williams' time in Washington.
Yeah, they may have gotten hit with this the salary cap stuff before, but they are not going to be fined for the Williams stuff. He was their defensive coordinator. In fact, you know, it was Tony Dungy who suggested that a Williams-led defense, a hit from Philip Daniels on Manning, actually led to all these neck problems that he's had that and required him to sit out last season. So a little bit interesting that Williams' other clubs, including the Redskins, were not dinged.
All right, let's welcome in senior editor Mike Wilkening. And as I said, Mike has the AFC North and the Cincinnati Bengals. Wilkie, very, very quiet early, and then all of a sudden a flurry of activity in the last few days. They are able to re-sign free safety Reggie Nelson, who was their leading tackler last year but was considering an offer from the Jets before they signed LeRon Landry. They add cornerback Jason Allen from the Texans. You wonder if turnabout is fair play. Of course, the Texans took Jonathan Joseph from them last year. Not sure Allen is the player Joseph is, but he's a quality cornerback, will be in their rotation. And most importantly, I guess, from their perspective, is they sign running back Benjarvis Green-Ellis. Cedric Benson is out there as a free agent. They were involved, along with the Chicago Bears, for Michael Bush's services, but they signed Green-Ellis, and Bush moves over to the Bears. But tell me from the Bengals' perspective how they're feeling now that they've actually brought a few bodies back and added a few more.
I think they added at positions of need. I think corner was a clear need. Leon Hall coming off the Achilles, I think they needed to get deeper there. You know, Adam Jones is a free agent. Running back, Cedric Benson, I think it played very well for Cincinnati, but clearly they were looking at some options there. Green Ellis is a guy that holds onto the ball very well, I think has shown some ability with New England. So you get him in there, you've got Bernard Scott, you've got some options, you've always got the draft for more running backs potentially too. So a nice little bit of a rally here for Cincinnati, but I think one area that you've got to look at with them is defensive line. They lost a couple players that were useful guys in Frosty Rucker, Jonathan Finene. Defensive line depth was one of their strengths, so it'll be interesting to see how they draft in that regard, if they can add anybody else. Certainly, you know, they've got a little financial flexibility still to make a couple more moves.
Well, one of the teams that has yet to make a move that blows anyone's hair back are the Cleveland Browns. And one move that they were potentially in on was the trade for the number two pick. Now, the Redskins obviously made that deal with the St. Louis Rams, moved up, sent a bunch of draft picks there, And it appears there was a little bit of a discussion there between the Browns and the Rams that, you know, maybe Mike Holmgren, the president of the Browns, felt like he wanted another opportunity. Can you explain what happened there with that number two pick in that trade?
Basically, Mike Holmgren had a sort of meeting with Brown season ticket holders last week, and you know, what he reportedly said, according to the Cleveland Plain Dealer, was that, look, that the Browns had, you know, made a nice offer, an offer on par with what the Rams had offered, but he implied that relationships that St. Louis and the Washington front offices had sort of was, you know, I guess the differentiating factor in terms of Washington getting that deal done and Cleveland not getting that deal done. So I think as it comes down to it, relationships are important in any part of business. What the Browns have to deal with in terms of reality here, guys, and I think, Eric, you made a great point. They need to, I think, be a little bit more aggressive in terms of adding talent. And, you know, the draft obviously is a time for them to do that. But this is a team that really has got to get better at the offensive skill positions.
All right, Mike, we're going to ask you to hold on just a minute. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more about the Cleveland Browns, the Pittsburgh Steelers as well. First, we do need to take a quick commercial break here, but we've got a lot more Pro Football Weekly news, notes, and rumors, actually before they even happen, coming up for you next. More Pro Football Weekly, the way we hear it from around the National Football League, visiting with two senior editors, Eric Edholm, good enough to co-host with me this week, and Mike Wilkening. Wilkie covers the AFC North. We were talking Cleveland Browns before that short commercial break, and Mike, you know, the Browns defensively made giant strides last year. I don't think anybody really noticed. They were one of the 10 top defenses in the league. They don't have a lot of household names, made a real priority of getting DeQuell Jackson, their inside linebacker, re-signed. Now they've signed Frosty Rucker. They've re-signed Dimitri Patterson. They've added Juqua Parker from the Philadelphia Eagles. These are Patriot-like moves, you know, where they're working in the middle of free agency, but appear to have even strengthened that defense more.
It's completely turned from this defense being a question mark at this time last year, where it looked like they were changing schemes, and indeed they did, to the 4-3 under Dick Geron, to the point that this is really the strength of the team now. I mean, they're going to get stops against most competition, a real sound defense. They have some very nice talent. You mentioned DeQuell Jackson, but up front, you've got a Tyber Rubin, you've got Phil Taylor, Jabal Sheard came on real nice last year. Joe Hayden on the back end at corner is a very good player. They've got building blocks there. I think that's why everybody's looking to see what they do offensively, because what they need is a skill position guy or two to come in there and have a Joe Hayden-like impact or Jabal Sheard-type impact in year one for them. So that's why it's all eyes on the draft with the Cleveland Browns with those two first-round picks.
Mike, the early phases of free agency have netted us a lot of money at the wide receiver position. We've seen the huge money paid out to Calvin Johnson and Vincent Jackson, people like that. What's interesting is that there are still a lot of guys unsigned, including Dwayne Bowe in Kansas City and Wes Welker in New England. And there's also the situation in Pittsburgh with Mike Wallace. It's kind of fallen a little bit below the radar. He's a restricted free agent. There were some rumors that teams like the Bengals or the Patriots might get involved, might be willing to part with a first-round draft pick. Well, it sounds like Wallace believes his value is right up there with some of these top guys. He believes that the 8-year, $120 million deal that Larry Fitzgerald got is the same kind of money he's worth. What is your take on this situation?
Well, Mike Wallace, as we know, restricted free agent, teams have to give up that first round pick for him, so that limits the market for him to begin with. And you could completely understand if indeed Mike Wallace didn't want to be signed in restricted free agency at this point, with regards to the fact that if he's unrestricted next year, the cap looks like it might go up next year. They've got all this money that could start flowing into the system, and you'd like to be on the market next year if you're Mike Wallace, if you have another season like you did this past year. So I think all things considered, it's still a fluid situation. Now, Mike Wallace kind of took to Twitter and, you know, basically said, don't believe everything you hear or all those things. So you never quite know in things like this, but what we do know is this. If Mike Wallace were to hit unrestricted free agency next year after another productive season, he's a guy that is going to strike it rich, whether it be the tag or whether it be a multi-year deal, you know, with a signing bonus in the eight figures, certainly.
Well, and of course, there's the assumption that he's able to stay healthy, and that's what always scares these players is how quickly an injury can change things. Mike, Hines Ward retires as a Pittsburgh Steeler after 14 years with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Just not clear whether it was his choice or the Steelers forced his hand.
Well, obviously they released him, and this was a situation where he came back a few weeks later, announced the retirement. Very obviously a guy that's going to receive Hall of Fame consideration, forever a part of Steelers lore. They're in good position at the position as they've drafted well over the years, but you know he's a guy that very obviously has been very important to them over the years.
That's an interesting one. He said very obviously going to receive Hall of Fame. It wasn't that obvious to me, but maybe you're right. I don't think he makes it, but consideration is reasonable. We're back in just a moment.
And now with the Publisher's Pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
And Eric, I got to tell you, what an embarrassment of riches as far as news and things we could comment on in the National Football League over the last 7 days. We've talked at length about the situation in New Orleans. We know there is more coming pending with the players, and I'm not sure there's that much more to add to that story at this point. But when I look at the fallout of the Peyton Manning signing in Denver, to me, it's a conversation that could go on and on and on. And let me start with this. I don't get why the Denver Broncos needed to trade Tim Tebow. What was John Elway's tremendous urgency and need to get the kid out of town? The one thing that everybody agrees on, he's an outstanding young man. He's a great person in the locker room. All of his teammates like him. He wasn't going to complain about playing behind Peyton Manning. He apparently told John Elway as much when Elway talked to him. Elway said, he said, you know, I was talking to Tim, and one of the things he said is, hey, you don't have to explain. This is Peyton Manning. Tim Tebow could have been a factor on that football team. Now, Peyton Manning's offense, the way he likes to run it, doesn't really lend itself to a slashback or that type of thing. But I think you make him an H-back, you let him continue to be your number three quarterback, learn from one of the greatest of all time, and maybe you give this kid an opportunity, and he can stay with that raucous and loyal fan base out in Denver and in the Rocky Mountain area. Now he goes to New York, where Lord knows what the Jets were thinking, because they've got this kid, Mark Sanchez, who's as fragile as any quarterback in the league, and they've now brought in one of those popular men in America, not just the NFL, who people are going to be calling for. And what's worse is some are going to be calling for him so they can see him fail. It's a terrible situation in New York. You're going to tell me that Tim Tebow and Santonio Holmes is a great partnership in a locker room? Let's put their lockers together, Rex, and see what happens there. I just think this is about arrogance and silliness of the New York Jets and trying to get back in the spotlight, and I think it could tear this team apart, and it's going to cost some people their jobs. I just hope it's not Tim Tebow, who appears to me to be a victim in this whole thing, and he didn't do anything to deserve this. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. My thanks, as always, to Randy Meyer. What a great job he does for us every week, producing and engineering. Our syndicator and home studio is Syndication Networks. And most of all, our thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks so much for being there. Please join us again next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly.